Welcome to the Starzology Astrology Podcast. I am your host, Alison Price, and I'm here with my co-host and good friend, Arwen O'Neill.
Hi, Alison. It's great to be here again.
So nice to see you once more. So in this episode, we're actually going to be doing a listener's chart.
Yeah.
This is part of I had this idea early in the year to offer online readings that we could do over the podcast so that people who wanted to have a reading but didn't really want to, you know, pay for it or sit or have it immediately and do the Zoom call, that we could have a conversational about their chart. And the idea is that several people have written in requesting these online readings, and this is our first one for Taurus. And we are just going to go over a few things in the chart, but there will be a blog post where you can go and see the charts and what we're talking about and so on.
Yes. Let's explain what Taurus means in case anybody is checking their ephemeris furiously going, what in the world? Did I miss that one? Is this like Ophiuchus? No. No, it's not.
No, it's not Ophiuchus. No.
Good Lord, no. That's the last time we'll ever say that word. Anyway, so Taurus is the name of this person who has written to us. So we asked if they want to have an alias, and they said yes, they wanted to be called Taurus, and that is a pastiche of Taurus and Scorpio, because as you'll see in their chart, those are the energies that are the most expressed.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting combination, and I'm glad she went with it.
Right? Yeah, it's cute.
So what we've done is Arwen and I have had a look at this chart. We've gone through several things. She has asked specific questions. We'll get to those in a moment. But before I go any further, I just want to give the details of the chart in case someone wants to calculate it.
Absolutely.
And follow along with what we're saying.
Yeah, sounds great.
So the chart for Taurus is 6:28 p.m. on the 28th of April, 1983, in Wellington, New Zealand.
Yeah.
Now, that returns in an ascendant of 28 Scorpio, just so you know you've got the chart right.
Yes.
Okay, so just when we start doing chart interpretations, the first thing I look at are the balances, and I'm with only counting the visible planets. We're looking to find out which of the balances and of the features within a chart, such as the modes, the elements, the polarities, the hemispheres, quadrants, and so on, are strong, because we really want to focus on strong ones. And what we have is that the hemispheres are balanced, the quadrants are balanced. It's pretty balanced there. But now the mode is strong. The fixed mode is strong. She has five planets in the fixed mode, and out of a total of seven of the visible planets. So that has been highlighted. Mm-hmm. Then on the triple division, the second division has four planets. So that is highlighted. And that's on our list of things to dig into later, perhaps. The sign Taurus, now moving on to all planets, it's got five planets in it, and the sixth house is heavily tenanted with six planets. So it's quite an interesting chart in that not everything has a strong, there isn't a strong hemisphere, there isn't a strong quadrant, and there isn't a strong element.
Yeah.
So really we're looking at fixed, triple division, four, Taurus, sixth house. These are our main thrusts that are being extracted that would then be delved into deeper in a full, thorough reading.
Yeah, it's interesting that it is so balanced between the quadrants, considering how many empty houses she has, because everything is concentrated in the first, second, sixth, seventh, and 12th house.
Yeah, she's only got planets in, what, five houses there?
Mm.
So that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. And tons of oppositions.
Yes.
Yeah, and conjunctions, obviously.
Yes.
Super interesting.
So the chart shape here is a seesaw, because most of the planets are on one side of the chart with multiple oppositions to the other planets on the other side of the chart, and there are no trines within the chart either.
Yeah.
There's a couple of sextiles, but mainly we've got a lot of oppositions and sesquiquadrates and quincunxes.
Yeah.
So you've got the one side of the chart and the other side of the chart. And that really is, I think, the story within this chart, that the seesaw business is typically with the seesaw, you would have one side dominating at some point in your life and then the other side dominating at another point in your life.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yes, it's like a tale of two houses.
A tale of two houses. Oh, very good. Very good. So then just moving on to the ascendant complex, we've got the ascendant is 28 Scorpio, and there are two first house planets, which are Jupiter and Uranus.
Yes, conjunct.
Conjunct in the first house. So they are prominent coming through with the Scorpio ascendant.
Yeah.
There are some aspects to the ascendant as well. So it's conjoined the moon, which is actually in fallen Scorpio.
And in the 12th house.
And it's in the 12th house.
Yeah.
And so it's actually then in the ascendant Gokulin sector as well. So that moon is quite already coming to our attention. And then there is the opposition to Mercury and Chiron, both in Taurus and the sixth house. They are opposing her ascendant. So already these particular planets have come to our attention. And if you were doing a thorough interpretation, you would go deep on these.
Yeah.
But this is the sequence with which these planets need to be addressed.
Yeah.
The next thing we would move on to then is the chart ruler complex. And because it's Scorpio, there are two chart rulers. So we do Mars first. And Mars is in Taurus, in detriment, so it's not particularly well placed there. And then Mars is in the sixth house, and it's also the evening planet because it sets after the sun.
Yeah.
So this is the lasting impression she gives when she's left a room. I think we spoke about this when we did the Oriental planet, which we're now calling the morning and the evening planets, what have you. And then Mars's aspects is she's got this neutral, Mars is conjoined the Mercury and the part of fortune. So that's great to have your chart ruler and the part of fortune together, because it makes your life almost, I don't want to say lucky, but more on the upside than the down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mars is also opposite the moon because it's part of that. It's one of those oppositions.
Yeah.
So that's quite a small chart ruler complex for Mars. And then with Pluto, which is the second one we look at, Pluto is in Libra in the 12th house. And Pluto is conjoined Saturn. This was that big Saturn-Pluto conjunction back in that year.
Yeah.
And Pluto is also sextile Neptune, which is, by the way, because virtually everybody has it.
In that 20th century,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And then Pluto is trine the North Node and sextile the South Node. So it's hooking in some of that lunar stuff as well.
Mm.
And then Pluto is also quincunx Chiron, which is a relatively minor aspect, but I'm noting it there. So there we've looked at the two chart rulers because they're important. Mars and Pluto are important in her chart. Next, we would move on to the sun complex. Now we've got the sun in Taurus in the sixth house. But the sun rules the midheaven, so that's quite nice.
Yeah.
And it's because I think you can resonate with that, can't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Having Scorpio rising and Leo I recommend it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there, the sun rules the midheaven, the sixth house, the eastern hemisphere, and the fourth quadrant, to go deeper. And now the sun is conjoined Mars and the part of fortune.
Yeah.
So that is quite a strong thing there.
Yeah.
It's opposite Saturn, and it's quincunx Jupiter and Uranus. So those two, I note them, but I wouldn't dig deep into those.
Yeah.
So that solar complex is, it's an okay sun. And then the moon in Scorpio is not well placed. It isn't. It's in the private 12th house as well, so it's behind the scenes. And it only rules the 9th house, so it doesn't rule any of the quadrants or hemispheres either.
Mm-hmm.
This is inclining me to say that the sun is a stronger force to be reckoned with than that moon, for
definitely.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then the lunar phase here is a full moon lunar phase, where it's the sun and the moon are opposite in the chart. I mean, it's a full-on blown. And we've got team sun.
Yeah.
And team moon. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, that would be something where you'd say the parents were fighting or using the child against one another, possibly.
Yeah.
Or you know, that they were just very, very different people and practically kind of, if they weren't divorced, they ruled very separately and had very different domain in the child's.
Different viewpoints, yeah.
Yeah, different viewpoints. They sort of, you know, managed different areas of life for the individual. And when they grew up, they maybe felt like they had to sort of choose sides.
Well, this is the thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
And then, of course, I mean, obviously that will definitely create a certain dynamic in one's relationships if your parents were either very, very different in character and you felt like you had to pick sides, or obviously if they were fighting all the time, that creates its own hardships and power dynamics in your relationships as an adult.
This is it. I often see this as that they parented differently. So, you know, where mom's saying, oh, yeah, no, go out and play. And dad's saying, no, be in by six.
Mm-hmm.
So that they weren't on the same page when they're actually doing the actual parenting.
Yeah.
So that's where that can come through, too. Yeah
I remember there was this a series of memes that were like these great old-timey sort of postcards of like 1950s housewives. And this one was I think it was Aries moon or something like that. And it was like, if your dad says no, well, then definitely yes, you can.
There you go.
Right?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so we've got these two sides. We've got the Sun Taurus side and the Moon Scorpio side. Yeah. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So I did the dispositor tree for this chart because I find this is always super interesting.
Yeah.
And what we have is there are two separate trees. So she has Jupiter in Sagittarius. That's the only planet in its own sign. So it's very strong and therefore goes on the top line. Mm-hmm. And the only two other planets in Sagittarius are Uranus and Neptune. So this is what I call the Jupiter tree. It's a one group on one side. Mm-hmm. Then on the other tree, the second tree, and I think you need more than two trees to have a forest, but anyway, we've got a pair of trees here. There's a mutual reception between Mercury in Taurus and Venus in Gemini. Hmm. Now, that is quite a nice thing to have. It's making that Mercury and Venus will have equal bidding within the chart because they're equally the same, although they could still go on the top line with Jupiter. But Mercury doesn't have any planets below it. It's not disposing anything else in the chart, so it doesn't have influence over her, but Venus has got everything else under it.
Interesting.
So this is putting Venus in a slightly stronger position here. Below Venus, we've got Chiron in Taurus, Mars in Taurus, Sun in Taurus, and then Pluto in Libra. So those are the two Venus signs, Taurus and Libra. And then below Mars, which is our chart ruler, we've got the Moon and Saturn. So Mars has got the drop on the Moon and Saturn as well. So.
Right. And interestingly, Venus is in the seventh house, which is sort of its native house.
That's right.
So
what we've got here is, again, we've got two sides.
Yeah. It's all about the polarities in this chart.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, although we've got the two chart rulers are on the Venus on the mutual reception tree, which is super interesting, I would say that this is going to be the prominent planets that are driving this chart, whereas this Jupiter, Uranus, Neptune is more likely to be put on the shelf, dealt with later, but the focus will be on this Venus-Mercury mutual tree.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting how you can unpack through dispositorships and essential dignities a different pattern to interpret these charts, and that's why it's kind of interesting to do that.
Yeah, because Venus wouldn't have stood out to me otherwise.
Exactly. And you're thinking, really, Venus? Okay, right. Then. Let's have a closer look at that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So then Torio asked us a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Didn't she?
Absolutely.
Just things to look at, because clearly one cannot go through the whole thing.
Right. So one of the questions is, I feel like I have a lot of polarity in my chart. Yes, we can confirm that. She says, very fixed energy of Taurus and Scorpio. Also interested to hear about the axes of 6th and 12th houses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So clearly she knows a bit about her chart, about astrology, and has pulled those two things out as being important. And we can confirm that those are
absolutely. So what's happening is in the 6th house is the Sun and Mars and all the gang, the solar gang, if you will.
Yeah.
It's like the Backstreet Kids or something.
The Backstreet Boys.
Or the Gasworks gang. And then the Moon is then in the 12th house. So. Yeah. Again, you've got these two polarities. Now, 6 and 12, when they are prominent, tend towards health. Mm-hmm. That attention needs to be given towards this.
Yeah.
And because she has multiple planets, she's got four planets within the 6th house, that is going to be things that you need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say here is that You know, you need to pay attention to your diet. You need to maybe get off the couch, do some exercise. And if you've got a twinge, go and see somebody.
Absolutely.
This is not the sort of chart where you can say, oh, I'll do that next year.
No.
You need to...
Don't ignore pain. Don't ignore anxiety.
Yes.
Get exercise, good nutrition.
Exactly.
Pay attention to your mental health. Absolutely.
Mercury's in the six. This is definitely going to be something where you might want to, I don't want to labor the point, but be anxious or something, or have some questions that rattle around in your head or ruminating continuously, and these sort of things. Although it's conjoined that Chiron, that does indicate that having someone to talk to, a guru or a guide, would be an ideal thing
to do. Don't keep anything to yourself.
Yeah.
Just reach out.
So this would be just general health in general.
Yes.
In general. And of course, the chart ruler is ruling that sixth house. And then on the 12th house, because they're both being featured, this would then be more chronic illnesses where deeper things have to be dealt with.
Yeah. So a sixth house stellium immediately jumps out at me as a hardworking chart, hardworking and possibly leaning towards a workaholic chart even, or someone with multiple jobs, or the necessity of multiple gig economy sort of piling on of responsibilities, yes, or possibly taking care of someone at home and then also needing to work either outside of the home or have multiple career streams to bring, yes, in extra income. And that just reinforces what we were talking about with health and the need to absolutely take care of yourself, to put your health first, to focus on anything that you can to lighten your mental load, mm, to get support and to not bottle things up and let things sort of fester or, mm, build up on you. This is definitely with the Saturn opposition and Pluto conjunct Saturn over there opposing those sixth house planets. Mm. It really is. Yeah. I see there's a lot of heaviness and, just really,
I agree.
A need to take care of yourself and to,
yeah.
Yeah.
And with all this energy in the sixth house, this is also the house of rituals,
right?
Where this woman needs to get her life organized. And she does, mm, this, then she does the yoga, then she does this, and then, yeah, she's preparing that because she's got a busy day.
Yeah.
We can see that.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to build rituals in. So you've
establishing good habits.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. So that you're organized and you've even got your nighttime thing ready so you can face the day.
Yeah. And relax and put away the burdens of the day.
Yes.
And start fresh. And, mm-hmm, you know, insomnia is a problem for, yes, so many people. And the necessity of just unpacking everything in your day and maybe having a nighttime ritual where you set the phone at a distance as much as you can. I know many of us use it as an alarm clock, so that's unfeasible, but as much as you can, set a time that you set the phone aside and don't look at it after a certain time, yes, of the night or
things like that.
Yeah, things like that.
Because frequently when you've got planets in the 12th house, it does, this is your house of sleep. Mm-hmm. And depending on the planets, you can, if you were younger, you might get disturbing dreams or nightmares even. But of course, if we get older, we get over these things. Yeah. But still, what worries you? You know, they say the darkest hour is just before dawn.
Right.
And there may be multiple things going through at night that that could be dispelled by a better organized day.
Yes. Yeah, because those things do. I mean, even just the anxiety of having nightmares or not being able to get back to sleep if you wake up in the middle of the night, those things are psychologically disturbing, but more so they chip away at your health because,
exactly,
you need a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, because they're 6 and 12, it does trend towards health and, yeah, of course, the workaday life.
Yeah. So in our questionnaire, we said, do you have any special areas of focus for the questions that you'd like us to cover in your chart reading? And she said that she would like to make the best of the delightful Pluto square Pluto transit that she's going through. And she says it's somewhat challenging. And I sense a great deal of understatement and possibly veiled sarcasm there, which is lovely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what she's talking about here is she's recently had, over the previous 2 years, she's had Pluto squaring her natal Pluto.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that has only happened since around 1940 onwards, because prior to that,
yeah,
Pluto was so slow, you would never get the square.
Right.
So anyway, so we're all living through these squares.
Yeah.
But what I've done is I've cast this graphic ephemeris for her, and I'm starting 6 months prior to this date, going 18 months into the future. And there I can see you'll have to look at the blog page to see this. But the Pluto square Pluto has finally passed. The last gasp of this was in December, and this can only have totally transformed her understanding of what her life is and who she is as,
yeah,
a person.
What house would that have traveled through?
I believe it's going through her third house. The Pluto is in her third house, squaring Pluto in her 12th house.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's quite a thing that Pluto has made this very challenging aspect. It will never come back, but it can only have transformed her life, because that is your main keyword for Pluto. And
right.
I always like to use the analogy with Pluto of you change in a way that you started off as this green furry caterpillar and then you actually transform into a fabulous, colorful butterfly,
yeah,
and fly off, yeah, into a new adventure.
But at the time, as you're going,
yes,
through it, it feels like death.
Well,
it feels,
yes,
like hibernation. It feels like some transformation that you cannot imagine what it's going to be like on the other side, because you're trapped inside this cocoon.
Yes.
I'm doing this thing with my hands in front of my face that you can't see,
yes,
as a podcast listener. But yeah, you're mummified and calcified in this sort of,
yeah,
tomb almost.
Yeah.
And feeling constricted by the silk threads of this cocoon, not to belabor the metaphor.
That's right. But if you've lived your life as a caterpillar for 30-odd years, yeah, just this regular old green caterpillar coming along, yeah, and then suddenly you come across this transit, which, yeah, is probably the most challenging Pluto transit you can get,
yeah,
and it's created transformation,
yeah,
but the butterfly has a different destiny.
Yeah. I'm picturing, like in the tarot deck, the Hanged Man.
Yes.
Card, where you're just hanging from the tree in this chrysalis.
Is it like a chrysalis or pure? Yeah, I don't know what they call them.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can only say that it has passed.
Yeah.
And you survived it.
Yeah.
You say, I survived Pluto square Pluto. That would be your mug. But then, of course, let me share the good news is that straight up, Pluto is going to now be squaring Saturn for you, also in the 12th house. So this started, during February, as we speak, Pluto's come for its first hit on that square to Saturn for half of January and February. It will then ease off for you and come back again in July and August this year to have another kick at the can, if you will. And then thirdly, towards the end of the year, in November, December and January 2025, will be the last time that Pluto is going to make this square to the Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only assume that any rigidity that remains within her life is going to be swept away at this point.
Yeah.
That she's going to come out of this, I want to say, a new woman.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
And
new rituals, new habits, new life-affirming ways of communicating, because that Pluto square traveled through her third house.
Mm-hmm.
And
depending who she is, we don't know very much about Torpio. We just know that she
is a listener,
and we know she is a listener. But anyone who's going to make a major transformation is you've just had the Pluto square Pluto. Now you're getting Pluto square Saturn, and then it will pass.
Yes.
There are other things cropping up, obviously, because Pluto keeps on coming.
Yeah.
But these are really, I would say that this year is going to be. Resistance and squares are internal dilemmas that you have within yourself, where you have to sort yourself out.
Yeah.
Whereas an opposition is an external dilemma where people keep coming at you and wanting to fight.
Yeah.
So you're honestly under these squares, you're fighting with yourself, saying, "Oh, but I've done this for 30 years. Mm. I can't change." But you have to change.
Yeah.
Things have to change, and things have to move from. And I want you to remember the caterpillar butterfly, because that's always a great idea that.
Yeah.
We don't know where a caterpillar, because we've only known the caterpillar life.
Yeah.
But there's something better out there.
Absolutely.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
So with this, we're looking with the transits for Torpio, we've only looked at the Pluto and only discussed that. Now, of course, there are other transits unfolding as we speak.
Of course.
And they would need further exploration. And there will be, I will put a list of most of them actually on the blog post, because I can do that so that Torpio can follow along and go deeper on these particular areas and not feel overwhelmed. I don't know where to start with these things.
Yeah.
The one thing I did calculate also looking forward was her solar return, because the birthday is in April. So why not? We just happen to have it. And it's really quite a good one, because with solar return charts, that is when the sun comes back to the place it was when you were born. So in this particular chart, it is bang on the midheaven. The sun is in the 10th house, conjoined the midheaven. But apart from that, it actually doesn't have an aspect. So technically, this is an unaspected sun.
Oh, interesting.
Now, in a solar return chart, that's interesting, because what it means is that the sun can work at its purest form.
Right.
Sun in Taurus can be its true self. It's not being influenced or leaned on by any of the other planets.
Yeah, it's actually, in a solar return, it's actually a wonderful thing to have.
It absolutely is.
You can choose.
And it's on the midheaven, so she's going to put it out there, Taurus midheaven. Because normally with a solar return chart, you look at the solar return sun's house, which in this case is 10.
Yeah.
So it will be public domain. And then you look at the sun aspects, and there aren't any.
Mm-hmm.
Only the conjunction to the midheaven, which is a point. That's why it's not counted in the actual unaspectedness of it.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah. And of course, just by the way, that this is a bold chart, because this year, 2024, we've got this super tightness within the planets. They're all leaning on one side. We've got a podcast about that as well. I'll link to it.
Yeah.
And just that the moon is wide, but once the moon tucks back in, we've got a very tight grouping of planets. So that will generally be for everybody. So you really just want to know where's your sun, what position is in. So the sun on the midheaven, going public, opening a company, getting your name out there, changing your name, marrying up, if you can say that. You know, I married the doctor, you know. That's what my mother would have said, marry a doctor. Now they're saying, what, marrying the IT guy or whoever. Right. But you're moving up, you're putting your name out there. People, your reputation will become more authentic because the sun is not being influenced.
Yeah.
So if she was interested in going public with something, this would be the year to do it.
Amazing. Starting in April after her birthday.
Yeah.
After April 28th.
Yeah, after the birthday, yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay, so we've gone through the main influences for Torpio's chart that are coming up and gone over the main features of the natal chart. And I would urge you to take these particular points that we've brought forward, dig deeper into them, read more about it, and get to understand your chart that way. These are the most important things. We've looked at some Pluto transit and just casually looked at the solar return chart. The point being, you know, it takes time to do full interpretations. This is why, really, you can't just have one consultation. You need at least 3 to 5 to fully explore your chart.
Yeah.
But I would urge her to continue on with her journey because she knows a bit about astrology and start digging deep on that and go public with whatever it is she wants to.
Absolutely. And just hang in there. Hang in there. It's going to be, we know it's been a rough little patch between the last year or so. And you're coming out of it. You're going
to
do great.
And the fact that you've reached out to us and we're happy to be able to look at this. Yeah, so I will have more details on the blog post and that will be a link below this podcast to go to look at that to see what else I was chattering about on further details. But there's just not time to talk about here today.
Yeah, it'll be a whole treasure trove for you to read and delve into.
Treasure trove, indeed, yeah. So as I say, this is an initiative of online astrology readings that I thought might be interesting to see how we unpack a chart for regular folk. And we'll be doing these now and then. We have quite a few in our lineup, so we're not taking any more at the moment, but it will probably up and up again later in the year. And if you're on my mailing list, you'll get to know about it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you found value in this episode, please do consider sharing it with somebody who would be interested. And if you have any questions, you can email us at starzology@gmail.com and we will get to your questions in another episode.
Yes. Thanks for reaching out, Torpio, and thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for getting this far through the episode. I just want to take a moment to tell you about the two main options of my astrology services. So the first one is coaching. If you are an aspiring astrologer, and by that I mean someone who's perhaps a hobbyist astrologer or someone who's learning astrology or a student, or you've got a few books and you've been doing it for a while, but perhaps you need a little bit of help to bring it all together, then maybe getting some astrological coaching from me would be the answer for you. The astrology coaching I offer is a 1-hour session on Zoom, and it's tailored to answer your particular questions. For example, if you have issues with natal chart readings, we can go there. Or if you're having problems working with your forecasting, we can go there. Or even basic astrology stuff, or even getting yourself organized for your astrology business. The idea is that astrological coaching will answer your particular questions. It's tailored specifically to you and where you are in your astrological journey. And I'm happy to help you out with some guidance about how you can get going, what to focus on, and what to dismiss. So that would be the astrological coaching for people trying to learn astrology. The second astrological service I offer is consultations. So this is for someone who perhaps doesn't know anything about astrology, but they just want to have their chart read or get their chart done. Call it what you will. So once more, this is a 1-hour consultation over Zoom. I will interpret your chart, tell you about the main features, tell you about where the energy is flowing, and all the rest of what is entailed in a thorough natal chart interpretation. I can also add in some forecasting in there too, bearing in mind we only have 1 hour. So just in summary, I've got coaching for people who want to learn astrology, and I've got consultations for those who want to get an astrology reading done. I'm Alison Price from starzology.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.